All right, so this office looks familiar. We're in Jean-Paul's office again. How are you doing?
Hey, Charles. How are you?
So what's going on? Did you create some new type of XML again, or what's going on here?
Not this time, but I think we have been working on something that would enable a lot of more people to use some formats based on XML or other formats.
Cool. Now, you mentioned formats, but before we get there, so who we have other people in here. How are you?
Hi. I'm Amy Marasco, and I work on our centralized standards team. I'm the general manager for standards strategy.
Wow.
And we also are very focused these days on interop issues.
Excellent. Very cool.
Hey, I'm Tom Robertson, and I'm the general manager for interoperability and standards. And this is a central team that works across the corporation on the issues of interoperability and standardization.
Cool. So now, on the topic of standards, there recently the announcement of the Open Standards Promise.
Open Specification Promise.
Okay, it shows you how much I know.
There you go.
So, what is it? How does that work? What's it all about, Open Specification Promise? We're promising what to developers?
Well, we're promising to developers that they can use our intellectual property that's necessary to implement a set of specifications that are listed on our website.
Okay.
And the good news is it's free, and you don't have to sign a license. It's just a promise that's made to everybody out there that they can go and be reassured that we won't sue them if they're implementing the specs and they want to use this needed patents that we have.
So just so that I'm clear, typically, with an open standard, by definition, one is able to implement something on top of it. For example, let's look at the WS Trust, which is a standard protocol. I can write something like card space, which is just an implementation on top of that. What you're saying is that the same type of idea, or are you going a little deeper? Can you explain a little more for me?
Okay, so let me explain. It's actually very simple. There is a technical spec, whatever it is, if it's a standard or if it's not a standard.
Mm-hmm.
Just a technical spec. Developers read technical specs all the time. It's really describe exactly the syntax and everything of what you need to implement, right? Mm-hmm. So let's take this spec. If Microsoft created or helped create such a spec in a standard body, for example, or by itself, well, Microsoft has actually added value to writing this, to creating this spec.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of questions of developers are, can I use safely this spec and can I implement it?
Mm-hmm.
Independently of Microsoft, independently of using it with Microsoft tools or with other tools or other environments. And so we kind of have been thinking about it. I am teaming up with Tom here since, maybe 6 months now, Tom, on trying to solve and help solve interoperability problems in any way or form, technical, policy, and all these things. And so we came and we were thinking, well, what is an easy way to have a developer being able to have this insurance that if there is a spec, he can implement it, and he doesn't have to ask himself legal questions. And we ended up with this OSP.
Okay, now this begs the question that in the past, me as a developer, I did have to worry about that. So if I came to a Microsoft website and read a spec for some new, protocol,
right,
and I decided to implement something on top of it, what you're saying is in the old days I could get sued.
No, in the old days it was complicated.
Okay,
we are trying just to simplify it.
Yeah, when we've had a number of instances where we make our intellectual property available to implement a specification on a royalty-free basis.
Okay,
but the instrument that we used to do that was sometimes confusing to people. And they said, well, how does this apply in this environment or in that environment?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have worked, Amy has worked with a number of people in the open source community to come to an instrument, an open specification promise, that is clear, is simple, and removes any questions that people have about their ability to use our IP to implement this technology.
Okay. And so, and I'll ask, I guess Amy's been working on this. What impact does this have on us, though? How does this affect Microsoft?
Well, basically what this is doing is it's really going to enable people to implement these specs, and we're very excited about that. It's going to really help us to be more interoperable with our products and these other people with their products and the whole ecosystem. But basically, we have been offering some of these patented technologies that underlie these specifications before for free, but you had to come and you had to find the license agreement somewhere on our website, you had to print it out, you had to sign it, you had to fax it back to Microsoft. Mm. And while there are many developers out there and many different companies that were very comfortable with that approach, and in fact they wanted to have a written license agreement, there are other people who say, that's not the way I like to do business. I don't want to have to engage in reading some legalistic document and signing it and faxing it back. And I really need something that's going to be easier for me to rely on, and in addition, that supports my ecosystem and they can rely on. And so basically, we reached out to the open source community, and we spoke with people like Mark Webbink at Red Hat. We spoke with Larry Rosen, who's a very well-known standards lawyer in the open source community, with Apache, with JBoss, with Andy Eftergrove, and we really listened, and we got a lot of feedback, and that really helped us craft this open specification promise in a way where they're very comfortable that they can go ahead with what they would like to do, and they can just rely on this promise without actually having to execute a license agreement. So hopefully we've made things a lot easier for everybody, and everybody can move forward and just do great things with the technology.
Absolutely.
I mean, the nice thing is, I'm not a lawyer, and the nice thing what I see is we have people like the people that Amy cited, mm-hmm. who basically are saying, well, this basically promise is a good text that basically guarantees that developers can go and develop mm-hmm. a specification without, you know, without any complication. And so, and they can develop this specification if they are working using Microsoft technologies, if they can if they are using open source environments, if they are on Linux or they are on the Macintosh or they are on Windows, it's okay. Mm-hmm. It just simplify the life for developers. Now, that's something I personally care a lot about it. Mm-hmm. We have been discussing a lot with Tom and Amy how we can make actually, you know, those kind of formats and protocol, those kind of specifications that are important for interoperability, mm-hmm. more easily implementable by a lot of developers. This is certainly something that's going to really help us mm-hmm. implement them.
Oh, so now, where doesn't the OSP apply?
Well, it's actually pretty simple. Mm-hmm. If Microsoft puts a specification under the OSP, mm-hmm. it applies all the time, and it never ends.
I see.
It's very simple. You see, it's half a page. You should go read it. It's half a page. Even me, I kind of go and ask a lot of questions to Amy. And my test was when I started really understanding, I said, well, maybe this is simple enough. So, yeah. Fine.
Well, you just blew my cover, man. Now everyone knows
he's
that.
Our test case.
Excellent.
And you can easily find out the specifications that under it on the website. So mm-hmm. Microsoft.com/interop/OSP. And
okay.
We've got everything listed. We have now there 38 web services specifications. We also added last week a virtual hard drive specification.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people ask us, is that it? Is that all you're
going
to do with this thing?
Yeah, let's talk about that.
And that's not it. This is a tool that we can use to make these technologies available when it makes sense. And mm-hmm. we fully expect to use this in a number of other cases coming soon and into the
sure.
future.
So now, when you say something like when it makes sense, that opens up a whole can of worms in the sense, maybe not can of worms isn't the best way because it's not necessarily negative, but it does yield a bunch of questions. So it's always going to make sense in the case of interoperability, right? Like,
well,
when wouldn't it make sense in the case where I'm a customer, I have, you know, very different platforms that provide my solution to a customer that requires that I provide very different platforms because they can't use some Microsoft technology, whatever. The customer decides what I feed them. And so let's talk about that. So this interoperability is huge amongst companies.
Yeah, you're absolutely right to focus on the customer. And that, at the end of the day, is what Microsoft is focusing on. How can we address the interop needs of our customer base? Now, sometimes we do that alone by designing our products so that they're interoperable out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we collaborate with other companies so that we can together create solutions that address interoperability issues.
Great.
Sometimes we make our technology available, including through the OSP, and other times we work in standardization efforts because that's one of the tools. It's not the tool, but one of the tools. Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk about making technology available mm-hmm. to facilitate interoperability, you have to appreciate the complexity of the technologies that we have out there and the many ways that people can use technology so that to create interoperable solutions. Mm-hmm. You know, we license our technology on commercial basis to other companies, and they use that to create interoperable solutions. That makes sense in many cases. In other cases, we have what we call community programs, where we are working with others in the community, or we're simply making technology available in a way that it can be used broadly, usually on a royalty-free basis.
Okay.
The OSP is a third way to do that, and for the class of technologies that are out there that really need broad deployment in heterogeneous environments. Mm-hmm. So we will use this. We'll use it where we want to see broad deployment in heterogeneous environments, and there's more to come.
Absolutely.
And honestly, you know, what Tom was talking about is really the different ways of we are, you know, of proposing technologies to customers and to developers to use. Mm-hmm. I want to go back to one of the examples where we just used the OSP, which is virtual hard drive, and that's a specification actually of a format. Mm-hmm. And which is used for virtualization, basically where you can take software and basically run it, let's say, on a server, mm-hmm. or make better take application on Windows and make them work on Linux or things like that. Mm-hmm. And so this is a format, and we have been discussing with customers, we have been discussing with partners, and it made sense mm-hmm. to, this is a pure Microsoft format, right? Microsoft created this format. It made sense to put it under the OSP. We announced that a few days ago, and, because we found the need to do that in this kind of heterogeneous environment. And so it's really around what makes sense, and we are learning a lot. Next week we have the first interoperability customer council meeting mm-hmm. that is happening. We are going to meet a lot of people, and we are going to also start dialoguing with them and understand what makes sense when, what are the real needs, mm-hmm. and we'll continue as Tom was saying. You know, just watch this space and look at what we'll be doing in the future.
So again, I mean, just to reiterate, what's the difference between OSP and open standards? I mean, let's reiterate that again. And Annie, you said you worked a lot with the open source community, so I'm sure you got a lot of darts slung at you. When we released that OSP was coming, Slashdot went crazy. We just can't do anything good. I mean, people still found problems with it.
Actually, a lot of people told us it was great.
Okay.
The OSP, we had like, I don't know, we were surprised. I mean, as a team here, we were
uh-huh.
really surprised. We had like articles left and right saying, wow, this is great.
Uh-huh.
We knew it was a very good thing, actually a lot of people, people from Sun, people are blogging, I mean, mm-hmm. a lot of people in the card space, a lot of people were really saying this is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that's one of the rare places, times, where we actually never heard any, basically, criticism.
Good. And it was a pleasure to work on this with some of the people that I was talking to out there in the community. Their first reaction was, when I called them up to talk about it, was, well, I am so glad you called. This is great. Let's talk through some of the issues. I am so glad Microsoft has made the attempt to reach out, get our input, you know, make some changes maybe based on that input. Mm-hmm. And they said, this is a fantastic dialogue to have, and we are just so delighted that you picked up the phone and called. And
mm-hmm.
and that led to numerous exchanges with many of these folks. These were not
and a lot
just
of great improvements.
Yeah, and it's true. We got some very good suggestions. We were reading it one way. They said, well, I'm reading it this way. And we said, well, no, obviously we have to clarify that because mm-hmm. they much preferred what we had intended, but we hadn't stated it very well. But it was a very healthy dialogue. And so actually, you know, a very, very positive process.
Okay.
I mean, you understand, Charles, this is really something impacting many people in the industry. You've got Microsoft, you've got the partners of Microsoft, you have people in the open source community, people who are, you know, creating software using different kind of licenses. So we really, you know, it impacts a lot of people. And so the fact that we're able to have everybody basically telling us, well, you know, if you change the text, left and right. That's what was Amy was doing. Mm-hmm. And at the end, everybody agreeing that this is a very short, concise text mm-hmm. was really by itself an achievement. And at the end, it's but a few paragraphs, but which makes sense to a lot of people.
Yeah, it's not as hard to understand as the 3-page legalese that most licenses that we won't get into the pistol licensing stuff.
I don't even know how to read those.
It's very hard to understand if you're not a lawyer. So developers aren't lawyers, so that's wonderful that you guys have done this.
Yeah.
Let me ask this. How far can I push the OSP? So, for example, you mentioned virtual hard drive. Is there any kind of language that says I'm unable to use it in a way it wasn't intended to be used?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
I mean, it's just a spec, right? I mean, when you write a spec, it's a spec. You go implement the spec, and I don't know.
I guess what
developers who are hearing, looking at this thing, understand it's just a spec. You go implement it.
Cool. Well, yeah. I mean, so it's a spec. I implement it, and I can actually.
And if you are an open source developer, you can go, do it.
Cool.
This is really done for that, right? Yeah. I mean, there are look at the first thing, web services, right? Mm-hmm. 38 specification of web services. What is web services? All around protocols and XML in order to enable multiple machines, so to interact. Mm-hmm. Well, what are the multiple machines? Well, it's a Linux machine, a Macintosh machine, a Windows machine. That's what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. So there is no limits. We don't want any limit to have developers implementing those things because if there was any limit, well, it just destroys the goal of interoperability, right? So, I mean, I know your question is, should I trust Microsoft?
Yeah.
People, look, I have been in this XML thing since a long time. And
yes, you have.
Nobody, when people really try to understand what we are doing here, it's really interoperability. And interoperability means two machines that are not from the same operating system can talk. I mean, it's not the definition of interoperability, but at least it's a part of it, and the OSP is done to enable those kind of scenarios.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a good point. I mean, I just interviewed a customer that has problems with interoperability, and one of the things that he asked was, it would be nice if Microsoft actually helped write some of the pluggable components, as opposed to just giving us. But specifications is great. Companies have developers. You plop down a specification that says, this is how we're going to be able to go from Oracle to whatever. Or this is how we're going to be able to go from our J2EE middle tier to SQL.
Right.
Implement it. Microsoft just gave you how to do it.
Right.
Is that what you're saying? We're going to give them how to do it.
Well, yes. Specification is exactly to describe how you do things.
Awesome.
And you go and implement it, and you don't have to, to take care of legal stuff.
Cool. So basically, this is opening up. It's opening up more openness, right?
That's right.
So. That's fair to state, right?
That's right.
Opening up some of our protocols, some of our ideas to be implemented freely.
In a way, though, it's let's be clear. This was already on many of these technologies were already available, if not all of them, on a royalty-free basis.
Okay.
What we're doing is addressing any questions that people may have as to their ability to use this these technologies in different environments.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense to make that clear, and that's the step that we've taken.
Okay. So So you mentioned a lot of your feedback you're getting is positive. What are some of the negative or question feedback that you're getting? Are you getting any good questions, sort of like,
I think, one of the good questions has been, is this it? This is what you're going to do with this? I mean, this is great for what it is, but how is Microsoft going to use this tool in the future, and how does this fit into all the other things that you're doing to address interoperability? And we have said, and we mean, that this is a tool that we will use into the future. We have to think about it and make sure it makes sense under the circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And should anybody in the community have an interest in a particular technology, wanting Microsoft to move on a particular technology, we're always open to have them come and talk to us about
it. Awesome. So again, if I'm a customer that wants to write a component that can talk to some proprietary Microsoft server, software, I can come to Microsoft and say, hey, can you guys help me understand this? Maybe, show me what I have to write? Because we're not going to give you open source, right? That's not our model, which is fine. So is that what does this help that model at all?
Well, of course, it helps the model because the way you speak with Microsoft is software is through XML, through some protocols, some formats. And you know, when there is this need of being able to discuss, you know, to exchange information, mm-hmm. then there are protocols and formats. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you look at the OpenXML format, if you look at a lot of formats like this, you can think about, a specification that is published. Mm-hmm. And then we can, you know, just make sure that there is no legal issues to have people being able to use it. And this whole thing is really around making sure the developer understand there is no legal issue. So they can go and just concentrate on developing mm-hmm. and making their machine talk to each other instead of concentrating on some other things that, you know, is less useful.
Understood. And you know, we're still protected in terms of our IP because we choose with community help, as you were just saying, what things get OSP'd, right?
Right.
So, I mean, in other words, I mean, I'm just, like, my question really is, what does Microsoft gain from this? Well, you already answered that. We're working with the community. We're being open. We're trying to help people in an interoperable situation.
And
right?
we have an interest in the broad deployment of these technologies across multiple environments. That's a good thing. Everybody, we think, has an interest in that. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're trying to facilitate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I mean, the interest is directly making the scenario available, right?
Okay.
I mean, if you're... We want to develop web services because we believe that there are a lot of scenarios for our customers where they actually really need to have those two machines that are not based on the same operating system, mm-hmm. the same platform, talk to each other. I mean, that's where basically they got the Windows machine, let's say a Linux machine. Mm-hmm. And the scenario is really where Microsoft actually have a value there because we would make business from that, mm-hmm. is to have enable our customers to have, you know, a solution working talking to these different machines. This is really the value is we're serving our customers. And so we went and engineered all this stuff, and you know, a lot of people were you know, doing that. We mm-hmm. didn't do that, you know, we didn't create the web services by ourselves. We just worked with a lot of people. And now we're just making sure that people from the legal point of view just say, well, fine, you know, there is no problem. I don't have to even think about the legal issues for these kind of specification. I can just go and implement.
Okay.
Which is now, more interesting, after all, for developers, you know.
You're, of course. But I mean, like
that's what we're doing, just simplification of this whole story. It was so complicated, I mean,
yeah.
that, you know.
But I mean, it sounds to me that the difference between this and, say, like the XML specification boards, when you guys write your specifications, I mean, it's clear that that's open. Right? That's the whole idea, the W3C. So this is different because these are specifications created by us.
No, and the website, it's both. In all cases, there's always this question, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're doing a standard, there's always a question, you know, can I use, people who do standard, they work together.
Sure.
And they kind of go, and if they work under the W3C, they actually tell the W3C, you know, whatever I do, you can use it to do a standard. Mm-hmm. So there's always these kind of issues where, I mean, is there a legal problem that, you know, somebody from a company, any company, not only Microsoft, participating to a standard body is actually providing their contribution for free. Okay. And every standard body has, you know, asked questions to the companies to say, make sure that you are providing free access to what you are doing. This problem is everywhere. It's not only for Microsoft, you know, in unique specification. It's everywhere. And what I'm hoping is we can simplify this whole thing, so developers can focus on the most important thing,
yeah,
which is writing code.
Right, got it, and not getting sued for writing it.
That's right,
and that you know that's a kind of a rare thing that happens, but that's
well,
awesome. That's awesome.
Thank you. Well, we are doing a lot of things here. I mean, I just want to make sure, you know, with Tom's team and mm-hmm. Amy, and we are really trying to here understand really deeply.
Mm-hmm.
We are teaming up, you know, together since now. Maybe more than half a year or something, mm-hmm. to really try to understand technically, you know, from my side, you know, from Tom's side, all the policy and standard, just to how can we make those interoperability questions resolved for our customers.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and we're doing a lot of things, and we will be continuing in the foreseeable future.
Because interoperability matters, you know. It's not the only thing that customers care about, but it's something that they do care about.
Mm-hmm.
And Microsoft has been thinking about interoperability for a long time now. And we've been talking to customers about interoperability for a long time.
Sure.
But, you know, we have realized over the past year or so that we should think more about it. We should be more systematic and more structured in terms of the approach that we're taking. And so I think the Interop Executive Customer Council is an example of that. as I said, we've been talking to customers for forever. But this is the first time we'll bring in very senior CIOs from the public sector and the private sector from all around the world representing different parts of industry to talk to us about the issues that they have with respect to interoperability, the kind of scenarios that they see on a daily basis, the pain points that they have, and think about working with us to try to solve those pain points. This is just one of the areas of input that we've got. There are lots of other areas of input from the community, and now we're being more systematic in terms of cataloging these, structuring them, trying to think about where we can, you know, get the highest value from the focus of our resources. And I think we've already seen a lot of progress. I think we're going to see a lot more going forward.
Excellent. Now, let me ask, though, like, we have to protect our IP,
yeah.
Right? I mean, that's tantamount, obviously. So you're going to run into, what if you run into an issue where we can't open up a certain specification that a customer wants? Have you run into that situation? Of course we have as a company. Does that question make any sense? You can say, no, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, you know, this really is a scenario-based issue. You know, we need to look at the particular facts of a situation and figure out the best way to address it. Mm-hmm. You know, IP may or may not be an issue in solving a particular problem.
Sure.
Standardization may or may not be an issue. There's a lot of different ways to address interoperability issues.
Sure.
Once you define what they are. And what we want to do is be creative and thoughtful and focused and do something about it. And, you know, we'll have to see. We've got a tool set that we want to bring to bear, and we'll think about what makes the most sense in collaboration with other partners in industry, in collaboration with our customers, in thinking about the best way to approach a particular problem.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, this is awesome. It's very awesome news that we're opening up to this level, and I'm excited. And any last things you'd like to say in this interview? I mean, I know you guys have been reading stuff on the internet, and have you seen any things that you'd say you want to set straight or anything like that? I think we've gotten everything out here. It's clear now what OSP is.
Yes. Just go and look at the OSP page from time to time, go to the RSS, subscribe to it, and this way you can be, you know, updated on the specification.
On the new ones that we add.
Yes.
And you guys are working on that all the time.
That's right.
Awesome.
And the only thing that I think I would add is that talk is cheap. You know, what matters is action.
Mm-hmm.
And just watch this space and check out what Microsoft is doing, and you assess for yourselves whether we're doing enough. If you don't think we are, give us a call, let us know, and we'll try to work through it.
Fantastic. This is awesome.
Thanks.
Well, thank you very much. Great work.
Thank you.